I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Mandel, and I'm your host. On today's program, Indigenous Radio. We'll hear another session from the great conference held by CKET Community Radio in Montreal, Canada, back on October 19th, 20th, and 21st. Do stay tuned. Last week, I brought you a session on human rights and journalism from the Media Democracy and Community Radio Conference held at CKUT Community Radio in Montreal, Quebec on the weekend of October 19th through 21st of 2007. This week, we'll listen to a session about Indigenous radio. Voices of Indigenous people are rarely heard in mainstream media, yet Canada has an active network of Indigenous radio stations and community radio shows. And we're going to learn more about that right now. First, we'll hear from Irkar Beliars from Montreal, who has been working at CKUT as a journalist and producer of Native Solidarity News.
My name is Aaron. I'm a volunteer at CKUT. I'm going to be moderating this panel. And this is a panel on Indigenous radio. And again, I think it's, CKUT as a community radio station, we've been privileged by the fact that we have a very strong and ongoing Indigenous news program, Native Solidarity News, which Irkar here is the host and programmer of that. And it's we've oftentimes defined ourselves as a media that stands in solidarity with Indigenous people. Not only throughout the Canadian state, but also throughout the world, and oftentimes reporting on struggles that most media fear to go.
My name is Irkar Beliars. I'm the producer of Native Solidarity News for the last 2.5 years, and I've been doing the show predominantly on my own because of just a lack of just not interest, but just people's time. But I started pretty much in radio at Dawson College. That's when I got the bug at CIXS. I walked into CIXS one day and I said, I want to do a show on classical music. And they were like, they looked at me because it was Dawson College, and classical music is not heard at Dawson College. It's all pop and Britney Spears and NSYNC. And so they loved the idea of me doing classical music. And essentially that's where I got my start. But I didn't really get into activism until I started at CKUT. I didn't know how bad it was. I was as ignorant as everybody else when it came to Indigenous issues until I stepped through the doors at CKUT and started doing research and started doing stories, started talking to people and hearing people's stories and hearing how bad it actually was, how bad it was for Native women, especially when it comes to the fact that there are hundreds, literally hundreds of missing Aboriginal women and girls in this country, and the fact that there's nothing being done about it. But also, to my dismay, is I've always noticed, especially in the mainstream media, that there are no real Indigenous stories except when it comes to a barricade. If there's a barricade, the mainstream media is there, look, the Indians are blocking the road again. Look at this. You know, they're slowing down our economy. They're hurting our economy. Or the stories of near Atwater Square, where a lot of homeless Native people live, and how they like to focus on that. They like to focus on the negative. They don't like to focus on the positive, especially in the mainstream media. They don't like how it is, how we live. The powwows rarely ever get any attention. The fact that there are missing women, or the fact that we have 3 times the national rate of suicide on most reserves, or that most reserves are in third world conditions, bad water, bad health, bad education. The mainstream media loves to fuel the stereotypes. And those are this, they get free education. They They get like they have their own land, even though the land is dead essentially. They have they're drunks, they're prostitutes. They're at the bottom of society. Why should we care? That's pretty much the message that the mainstream media has thrown out there for the masses to consume. Is why should we care? It has nothing to do with us. Well, who cares if there are hundreds of missing Aboriginal women and girls in this country? Who cares? It's not me. Why should I care? And I think it has it's been fueled. The mainstream media naturally has become big business. It's all about sensationalism. It's all about who Britney Spears is sleeping with now, or what is Paris Hilton doing. You know, it's not about the journalism started about telling. It was all about telling stories. It was all about telling the truth, and that has become lost in Canadian society. It's no longer important. You know, the stupidity of life, the stupidity of society has become big business. That's what reality is all about. And Native Solidarity News has been around since 1996, and it came out of the Oka crisis. It took a crisis for Native Solidarity News to be born and to start sharing stories, because at Native Solidarity News we want to tell stories that about the barricades, but we want to tell the stories about the people behind them, because the mainstream media only stops at the barricades. They don't continue on past those barricades to the stories of the warriors who are standing on top of those barricades fighting for what's important. And I find that it's really sad, because they're completely missing the point. They're CFCF 12, when the Day of Action happened last June, you know, they focused on the barricade that was happening near Ganawagi and the barricades that were going right across the country, but they really didn't focus on what was happening in town with me and Chad Dibo and a slew of others helped organize was a peaceful protest. We wanted to walk through the streets of Montreal. Sure, we slowed down traffic, but we didn't block traffic. The only people we inconvenienced for maybe an hour. But we ended up telling a story, and CTV gave like a couple of minutes to that. And it was really just frustrating, because again, they're missing the point. They're not seeing what it's like. You know, I will applaud the CBC for the work that it's done in the multicultural area and in indigenous rights, because they tend to focus a little bit more than the other mainstream media organizations in North America. They want to tell the story a lot more than they want to deal with the sensationalism. That's probably why they're really poor and they're always dealing with cutbacks, is because they choose to ignore the sensationalism. But I organized the Sisters in Spirit vigil, which took place October 4th, and I was really upset. Like, it was a beautiful vigil. We only had 35 people, but it was a really, truly intimate vigil that I wish the mainstream media had seen, because I had sent them emails, I had sent them the poster, I sent them everything. I contacted every media organization in this city saying, look, we're doing this. This is important. This is a story. It's about missing women. And unfortunately, about when it comes to missing women, and it depends on the color of your skin in this country. And I hate to say that. I hate to say that it's a race issue, but it is. It's a race issue. It's a race issue. It's a race issue. You take and a prime example of that would be those two girls that were out on Georgian Bay who got swept out into the bay. They had the OPP, they had the RCMP, they had slews of volunteers, they had the mass media going, oh my God, these two white women, these two white girls have gone missing. Let's go find them. We have a vigil, and this vigil did not just take place in Montreal. It took place in Ottawa. It took place all across the country, and it also took place in two cities in South America. Nothing. We heard crickets. It was ridiculous. You know, it's like, and unfortunately, it comes down to the color of the people's skin. It's a class issue. And the mainstream media has constantly ignored issues like this one. Like the fact, I would like to see them pay attention to the fact that there are a lot of our youth who are hanging themselves from trees. And that's a story. Why? Why are they doing this? Why are these youth becoming so disenfranchised with the, with life so that they go out into the woods and kill themselves? Or why is it that when Prime Minister Harper had his big throne speech, didn't mention poverty at all throughout his throne speech? He didn't talk about the fact that there are thousands of people on the streets. There's a lot of homeless people, and there's rarely ever any funding for the homeless. It's a big anti-crime bill, or it's let's do something about health and education when that rarely ever materializes. It's just a hollow promise. I think when it comes down to it, is people are afraid, especially people in the mainstream media and the people behind the mainstream media that control them. They're afraid of what we have to say. They're afraid of what message we will bring to the people. That's why we're relegated to the community radio stations across Canada and the United States, where we're kind of, they're scared to hear about the genocide against our people. The fact that there were an estimated 50,000 children that died in the residential school era. You know, they don't want to hear that. You know, Canada voted, along with the United States, New Zealand, and Australia, voted against the Indigenous, the Declaration on Indigenous Human Rights. They voted against that. Why? Because they knew it was going to come back and bite them in the ass. They're afraid. And it's that fear that fuels the mainstream media and pushes the mainstream media further away from our stories. It's okay to talk about genocide in Africa. It's okay to talk about AIDS and diabetes and health problems in Africa and other countries. It's okay to talk about that. And those are all serious issues. But what about your own backyard? What about the fact that there are third world conditions in our communities? There are bad water. There's diabetes is going through the roof. There are high suicide, missing women. You know, it's like, why don't you talk about that? Why don't you take a look at your own backyard? And again, it comes down to fear. They're afraid of looking weak in the world community. You know, Canada is one of the richest nations in the world, and yet they manage to hide the fact that there are human rights abuses on their own land. There is blood on the ground from First Nations because of what they've done, what the Canadian government has done, what the Canadian media has chosen to ignore. And they will continue to ignore this until we learn to fight back. Like, we are a wounded nation. There's no question about that. We are a wounded nation, but we are not a dead nation in any stretch of the imagination. We are still strong, and we have gotten stronger. In the last 40 years, as people have noticed, that like organizations like AIM, for instance, have brought out the native issue. And as I've noticed, which is just boggles the mind, is that the legal organizations in this country, like or in the United States, the FBI, the RCMP, the Canadian and U.S. governments have tried to squash us and tried to place labels on us, calling us terrorists. There's even a Canadian military handbook out there that teaches the military how to infiltrate warrior societies and how to execute our leaders. You know, it's like when the Canadian government and the U.S. government is doing that, is actually going out of their way, spending hard-earned tax dollars just to say, look, you know, this is how we take out these guys. You know, it's like, and then Prime Minister Harper gets on his little pulpit and says, well, we live in such a multicultural bastion. You know, it's such a fantastic, all the cultures get together. That's crap. Not all the cultures get together. Only certain cultures get together in this country. The ones who are the poor ones are the ones who are left behind. A lot of the times, it's the immigrants and it's the First Nations people in this country. They're the ones who are forgotten. They're the ones who need help. You know, it's like, people have to understand that if you want to make this country work properly, you have to include all of us. And that includes airing your dirty laundry. There's dirty laundry out there, and someday soon, it's going to get aired, and it's going to get aired in a big way. And I like to thank the youth that I do the show with now, that are from the Intertribal Youth Center from the Native Friendship Center, who I've been nudging to get close to the mic, because one thing Chief Dan George said, and I will always believe this, is when he was speaking at Canada's centennial birthday, he was up there on stage, and one of those lines that he said was, "We must learn to use the tools of the white man so we may speak in the halls of law and government." And that can, obviously, he was referring to education. Education is the key. Communication is the key to growth within our communities within Canada, so that we can not only merge with the Canadian identity, but also keep our identity at the same time. You know, people need to understand that, you know, it's like we don't want all our land back, because it's just that's pointless. What we want is just equality. We want understanding. We don't want to be left out in the cold by the Canadian government, by the provincial governments. We want to be understood. That's all we want. When people go around our opponents say, you know, all they want is all their land back, it says, no, we don't. We just want equality, like you guys have. You know, it's simple. Equality is the only way this country is ever going to work properly. And if that doesn't happen, this country is just going to spiral deeper and deeper until it just gets consumed by its own lies. And the more you try to keep us quiet, the more we're going to shout louder. The louder we're going to get, and the stronger we're going to get. Because right now, and what I've noticed, especially with the Day of Action, is that not only have you pissed us off for too long, you've pissed off a lot of non-Native groups. Because there are a lot of non-Native groups that I noticed during the Day of Action that joined us and marched with us and sat and shouted our slogans and said, this is intolerable. We cannot continue to do this. It's ridiculous. And I'm just hoping that, you know, it's like through these conferences, through Days of Action, through vigils for missing women, that people finally understand. I know next year I will be planning the next October 4th, I will be planning the vigil. And if I have to walk into CTV and other radio stations and just grab them up by the scruff of the neck and say, look, you know, it's like, pay attention, because this is a serious issue. First Nations rights is a serious issue, and it's not going to go away.
Thank you very much, Erkar. I'll turn it over now to Stuart Mayo.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Stuart Mayo. I'm a Wolf Clan representative within the Mohawk Traditional Council in Gunawagi. And for myself, as far as my experience within radio, is that roughly 21 years ago in Gunawagi, we've had a local radio station there, and that's called CKRK, K103. And what had happened with me is that I didn't have any interest in pursuing anything in radio, you know, any kind of career or anything like that, or even wanting to get on the radio. I didn't have no interest in that whatsoever. But what was happening in Gunawagi is what's been a continuous thing upon our people as the genocide has been evolving, that different things have been evolving also with our people. The resistance to the genocide has evolved alongside with the genocide itself. You know, it's like the Canadian government created mechanisms like within the bank council systems of Canada to carry out genocide upon our people. So as our people resisted that, we became knowledgeable about those things, those weapons they were using against us. So of course their weapons had to evolve, and so did our weapons. And the weapons got to the stage of where media has become a main main mechanism for both sides, as you pointed out, that the mainstream media only puts forward a certain thing about the native people or native issues, you know, and it's always a negative thing. Like you pointed out, here's another roadblock, here's the natives again starting trouble or protesting about this or that, you know, never talking about the issue never addressing the issue, just putting forward a negative position. And this is what the situation was back in, it was around 1986, where these things were evolving in Gunawagi. The genocide was still being carried out by our own people from within the bank council systems. And I found that nobody was really saying anything or doing anything. Of course, the traditional people within the longhouse were saying things and doing things within the longhouse. We're basically limited to talking to our own people, like-minded people. Well, the genocide that was being carried out was being done right across the board. And the communication from that side, what was being carried out by the Bank Council, was being done simultaneously with the mainstream media. So we were really being bombarded, and we didn't have any mechanisms really whatsoever as to how to reach everyone. Whereas on the opposite side of the coin, the mechanisms were there. They could reach absolutely everybody. So what happened with me was that there was on the local radio, KRK, there was a noon hour talk show that they've had since the beginning of KRK, which was probably about 4 or 5 years prior to this. CKRK has been around 25 years now. So it was about 20, 21 years ago when I started getting involved in it. And the reason why was there were the Bank Council was passing certain laws. They were working on this thing called self-government. And of course, I won't go into depth about self-government, but it is a mechanism to accomplish and attain the final steps of genocide upon our people. So I said that, well, to myself, I looked at the opportunity that was there within the local noon hour talk show, which wasn't used for anything political. Up until that point, it was just people talking about whatever, you know, talking about things that they want to talk about, but it was never about the political issues or the things that were really negative happening to us. So I called in to the radio and asked how you get on the talk show, you know. And anyways, the first time I got on the local radio on the talk show was roughly about 20, 21 years ago. And from then, I've been on the radio at least once a month, you know, sometimes two times a month, until recently, until this past year, where the Band Council, because the Band Council controls the radio in Gunawagi, and the Band Council is the establishment. They are the genocidal mechanism within our own people to carry out the genocide, the finalization of it anyways. So the Bank Council is basically controlling the radio because they make up members of the board. Maybe not all the members, but the Bank Council makes sure that they have members on the board where they can influence whatever. So policies within the radio station have been changed where now you can only get on every 3 months. But the reality of that is that they're saying this only to the individuals within Gunawagi. But the radio station itself has a weekly show where the Bank Council is on every Friday. If they're not on every Friday, maybe for some reason they skip a week, but they're guaranteed their spot. So if they don't make it on this week, well then, you know, they're on next week. But they're guaranteed once a week to have an hour show where they can pump the propaganda into the people, into the airwaves. They also have a weekly show every Wednesday, which is the Ganyangeha show. That's the Mohawk show. So you really have Mondays and Tuesdays and Thursdays, 3 days a week that are left for, you know, whoever wants to apply to have a show. But since they put these limitations in place where you can only be on every 3 months, very few people are asking for shows. So now the radio show has to go out and ask people if they want to be on the show. So what the kind of shows that we have now on KRK is almost on a weekly basis, at least twice a month, because the radio station now has to go out and ask people for shows. They have this thing that's called office politics. And they do that show at least twice a month. So because they're not an individual who's not applying, because the individuals have been cut off to once every 3 months, because they're asked by the radio, they can be on as much as the radio asks them to be. So you have basically 2 days a month, 2 days a week, I mean, sorry, that are open to the public. Now, those 2 days out of the week are not what you have there now is you have things that aren't the like the immediate concerns of our people. So what I found is that in the first instance, I didn't have the slightest want or inkling to want to be on the radio. It was out of necessity. Out of necessity, the radio station, community radio, served its purpose, where the people had access to it. But then when the establishment has control over the community radio and they find out while the people are utilizing this, exercising their voice and talking against what the establishment is doing, then the establishment shuts down the voice of the people. Now, what I found that I've had to do is I've had to make the jump from local radio on the airwaves and go to internet radio, where now we have an internet talk show, internet radio show, every Sunday from 10 to 12, from 10 in the morning to 12 noon, and that's mohawk-radio.com. I don't really know much about it. All I do is I go and talk there. I don't know much about internet. But I was left with no alternative but to do this. So what we see is the trend is that, as we know, the establishment, I don't have to explain to you, that the establishment, of course, will assume power and try to oppress. And this is exactly what the Bank Council has done with the local radio. So I'm not saying that the local radio is totally, that the people totally have no access to it. But it's a matter of that the people need to find out how to get their power back, their control back over things that are supposed to be community-owned, like here in CKUT. The community controls it. The community has their input, decides the shows. While in places, other places, we have to make sure that the establishment doesn't get control of that radio, doesn't get control of the voice of the people. And in reality, you know what? That's the responsibility of all community radios. If CKUT knows that this is what's happening in Gunawage, then CKUT needs to help us. Other local community radios need to help us. Because if one community radio voice is able to be squelched, then that would be like the beginnings. Others can be. It was only because I had no choice. Nobody else was saying things. That's why I got into radio. And now I got on the internet because I had no choice either.
Thank you very much, Stuart Mayow.
And that was Stuart Mayow, a representative from the Mohawk Traditional Council of Kahnawake in Canada. And that was a session on Indigenous Radio from the Redefining Media, Media Democracy and Community Radio Conference held October 19th through 21st, 2007 at CKUT Radio in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. CKUT is celebrating its 20th anniversary. We thank them very much for making this great audio available to us. And you can hear more at ckut.ca on the internet. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can also be downloaded at Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia, KWMD Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate969.org, and RadioDriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station, too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.